Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right, excellent, Rifters. What's going on? Keith Razor with my trusty colleague, sidekick, best pal, red glasses, Alan Lee.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, especially the red glasses part. I want everyone to visualize that.
Yeah, you wore the red glasses 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, and I wore them at Sheena Metal's party at the Improv. You know,
I wasn't there, but you went to Sheena Metal's
anniversary party
at the world famous Hollywood Improv.
At the world famous Hollywood Improv, she was there, of course. She had a wonderful show. Talked about how she got started in radio, and it was fabulous. You know me, I love those events. You know me. Yeah. You were at somewhere working and probably doing some comedy somewhere.
Yeah, I went. I had work at the day job. And then I was on my way to go, and then I saw an open mic thing, and you know me, when I see comedy, I just got to do it. So I did an open mic.
Oh, wow.
And I got to tell you, because I'm trying to do a clean set, because I got rejected by this comedy club. So I tried to do a clean set at a bar, and it did not work.
Oh. The clean set or the dirty set?
No.
Or the blue set,
A clean set.
It was a little bit hard to do.
At a bar.
Yeah. Well...
Like they, because I think people's attention spans at bars are just too, they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'll never forget.
It's hard doing knock knock jokes at a bar. That's what I'm saying.
Who's there?
What?
No, who's there?
No. I was just telling you a knock knock joke.
Well, I thought you wanted to do one now.
Oh, I don't know. You know knock knock joke?
I can come up with one.
Okay, so you say knock knock.
Knock knock.
Who's there? No. I say knock, knock.
Who's there?
Okay, wait, do I say or do
no,
you?
No, it doesn't matter. Whoever starts it.
Okay, you start.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Our next guest is not here yet. Sorry. That's the only improv I could come with. Anyway, I remember when you ran a room, was it Huntington Beach? You ran two rooms, actually, but you ran Centerfields, which is a sports bar.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember how hard that was, and it was challenging, and you got up there, and you know, like you said, it's like you just said about what happened to you.
Oh, yeah.
And you handled it well.
Yeah, but back then I was a lot more newer to comedy, so I didn't really understand bar crowds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But after you do it for a while, you would think they're not going to like clean jokes, but I still did it because I got practice it,
sure,
so I could send the set to the club and be like, hey,
look how
clean I am, you know?
But what I was trying to say is that at Centerfields they liked you. I thought you, I always liked you there, and I went up, you put me up a number of times there,
yeah,
and I learned a lot from that experience.
They do comedy night at Centerfield now too.
Don't go there because you were running the room, so
yeah,
and you
I don't would, like you, running rooms because it's like I just want to make people laugh, and then
sure,
like, if I'm running rooms, I have to deal with comics, and then, you know, they're like, oh, why isn't there a crowd? And it's like, because my family.
Well, why didn't you put me up first or second or third?
And I was like, well, I would, but you don't have red glasses like Alan.
That's maybe. Correct. That's right. Many times you said, Alan's going up tonight, ladies and gentlemen, and you put me up first, which is that the weakest, going up first? That's like the weakest spot.
Traditionally?
Yeah. I thought it was.
Traditionally, you know, the host is the weakest spot.
Yeah.
But at a bar, I don't think it really matters.
It doesn't matter. But you let me host.
Yeah,
I never forgot that.
Hosting, I think, at a bar is a lot stronger than hosting at a comic club.
Thank you.
Because hosting at a bar, if you think about it, you have to be a headliner.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Because, you know what, let's just talk to our guest about this. This is an excellent question.
I think that
because he's
Mr. Scheidner.
Yeah, he'll know way more than me.
Would you please ask him that?
Well, we got to give him an introduction.
Yes.
But these opening remarks are taking forever because I'm in love with these red glasses of yours.
I know they're dazzling, aren't they? our guests in the next show will love them, too.
And next time I wear the blue glasses. All right, guys. Blue material, get it?
Oh, that's cool. I love that.
All right. Well, guys, before we're phoning in our next guest, our guest, you guys have seen him in Married with Children, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. He wrote a book called Kicking Through the Ashes by Rich Scheidner.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the star of a documentary called I Am a Comic with Rich Scheidner. And I'm willing to bet our guest is Rich Scheidner.
You know, it's a wild guess, but it's Rich Scheidner.
Scheidner?
You said it right. Scheidner with a D, N-E-R.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought I said, right?
No, you did it beautifully.
All right. This is going to be fun. We're calling him now through the Skype.
Hi, this is Rich. Please leave a message. Thank you.
At the tone.
Excellent.
Oh, there you go.
So Rich did not pick up?
Yeah. You had the correct number, I take it.
Well, obviously, the voicemail said, hey, this is Rich.
No, but that's not his cell phone.
Well, I'll text him right now. See what's up. Should I try him again?
Yes, please do.
Because I tried texting him, but I don't know if it went through because I don't have any signal. Is like,
hi, this is Rich. Leave a message. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Rich, it's Keith Reza. Just giving you a buzz.
Checking in.
And, okay, it's 7:05. You said call you, so I'm calling you. All right, I'll hang up and then I will call you again. Excellent. Bye.
So, we'll give him a buzz.
Yeah.
Anyway, while we're waiting,
I love Skype.
You know, I didn't realize when you said Skype. Why using Skype when you're not going to? This is not going to be on video.
Well, Skype also does the audio too.
You don't use a video.
Yeah. I didn't. Wait, no, but we don't have a video.
Yeah.
But
I thought you were, you know, Skyping him and then he was going to Skype us back.
No, I'm going to Facebook message him.
We'd see each other and be cool.
Because my text message did not go through.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll give him a call.
Would you want. Here.
No, I got it. Just entertain the folks. Tell
so
them about
yeah,
your
you know,
day.
It was a great party at the Improv. And Sheena, which I just spoke to, told us all about how she got started in radio. Sheena Metal here, and it's a great show. She has. It's topical. She has all guests from all over the place. Knows everybody. You know, Sheena Metal here at LA Talk Radio in our internet radio empire. Here in Sherman Oaks, California. And she found herself in radio first as an actress, which she is, a good actress, a writer. And like me, she fell in love with the microphone. And it's a blast, you know. In fact, I would recommend that is almost therapy. If you want to go out and buy...
Hey, Rich, it's Keith.
And buy a microphone.
Hey, I've been trying to call you. Can I hang up and call you?
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to call you in 2 seconds.
Purchase a mic.
I have it.
On Amazon or wherever you like. Amazon's one of my favorite places to go to buy microphones.
All right, so I just got done talking to Rich. So I called the phone on my cell phone.
Wow.
And he was like, hey, man, I thought you were going to call me on your cell phone.
Let me finish this one line.
Oh. Did I interrupt something?
Yeah, because, you know, you were getting the guest. Please get the guest on right now. Don't worry about me.
Oh, but finish your story.
Anyway, buy a microphone at any place, even if Big Lots for that matter, 99-cent store. Get yourself a little amp, put it in your room, and at night just go crazy on the microphone. You'll have your own little show before you go to sleep, and you'll be happy.
That sounds like an excellent story.
Right? Yeah,
I can't wait to listen to it. But here it comes with Rich.
All right.
Hi, this is Rich. Please leave a message. Thank you.
Now he just called me. Okay.
See.
Oh, I should probably tell him I'm calling him. Okay.
I love this part of the show.
Hi, this is Rich. Please leave a message. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message.
Okay.
When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
We are having technical difficulties.
If you are satisfied with your message, press 1 to listen to your message. Press 2 to erase and re-record. Press 3 to continue recording where you left off. Press 4.
Okay, how do I do a new call?
Are you still there? If you are satisfied with your message, press 1 to listen to your message. Press 2 to erase and re-record. Press 3 to continue recording where you left off. Press 4.
I can't press 3.
You can't?
No. I got this.
Are you still there?
Wait,
if you are satisfied with your message, press 1 to listen to your message. Press 2 to erase and re-record. Press 3 to continue recording where you left off. Press 4.
What's going on?
Sorry, you're having trouble. Your message has been sent. Goodbye.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so they hung up. Okay, he just texted me, call him, so I'm calling him.
At the number, correct number.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Here it is. I hear it ringing.
Okay.
Hey.
Hey, Rich. How's it going?
Hey, Rich.
Hey.
Hey, man. Cool. Technology, huh?
Yeah. I should probably just quit my car. I'm out in the street here at Mill Valley.
Oh.
Oh.
I'll probably just sit in my car.
Beautiful.
You're performing at that theater tonight, huh?
Yeah. I'm right out front, right near it. But there are a lot of people out over there, and I don't have to go find my way in. I can just sit here and do the interview here.
That's fantastic. Wow.
Well, I appreciate you doing the interview. That means a lot.
Sure, man, sure.
He's got things to do.
We were trying to call you on the Skype, but for some reason it wasn't working.
Yeah, I wasn't getting it. You know, I had my thing on, but see, it wasn't ringing. My phone wasn't ringing. Your Skype attempts wasn't ringing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't like Skype anyway.
Yeah, no.
It's all about the FaceTime. You ever do the FaceTime?
Yeah, of course.
So, Rich, first of all, I just want to say, thank you so much for doing the show. We tried to get you last year, but it just didn't work out with whatever. But
he's a busy man.
I really love your comedy, but I don't think we've ever met. I know we talk on Facebook and stuff, but have we ever met?
I don't know if I have or not. I don't. I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so. That's the thing about Facebook is, like, you could all connect, but it's like everyone's like, oh, yeah, you should get Rich Schneider. And I was like, yeah, I love Rich, but I've never met Rich.
Well, you're meeting him now.
I've done a lot of shows. I haven't met the people beforehand. That's quite all right.
Yeah. Are you a name person or are you a face person?
Face.
Yeah, me too. I'm a face
person. Visual, visceral.
So we like to call. Mm-hmm. We like to listen to little other interviews that you've done, so we don't ask you the same questions.
Same questions he's already had.
You think that's smart, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Watch the first question be the one.
I like how you said. I like how you go. We don't like to answer the same question, and here's your partner. He goes, same question. You know, like you guys are saying the same things you say, and like to ask the same question.
But I was listening to the Johnny Carson podcast.
Very good.
And that was a great interview. But did you think it was like a little weird that the guy knew the exact dates and all the other guests you did the show with? Like, I was like, holy Lord.
Yeah, he looked up them. He knew a bunch of them. He didn't know them all, but he knew a bunch of them. Yeah, I thought that was very wow, man. That was some good research there. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, I was just thinking my whole time, like, if I was ever on that show and I did Carson and someone was interviewing me and they'd send these dates, I was like, I did it on that date?
Yeah. Your third grade.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah. Some of them, only a couple I remembered. I don't know the exact dates, but just kind of the year, but that's all. I don't know it.
Yeah, I was like, because on my calendar it said I had a dental appointment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know. Let me get that calendar for you. Well, let me get that 1986 calendar. I got it in my box over here right by my desk.
Well, you know, without mentioning any other podcast, Rich, we found it very funny that one gentleman asked you, he said, you know, I used to go to comedy a lot. I went to different clubs, and I think I saw you somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And he just said, and you handled it very well. You nodded and said, that's possible. You must have seen me somewhere.
Alan doesn't.
He kept a straight face, and I laughed my ass off because the guy just went crazy, you know, like. Like, oh, yeah, I know I've seen you, because we used to go out. We said, what the fuck, you know?
When we were watching that, I just, you know, I loved your facial
expressions. Comedy? Is it possible I saw you do comedy?
Yeah. I could believe it.
Yeah, it's possible. That's why we're talking right now, isn't it?
Alan doesn't like to mention names, you know, because he's like one of those safe guys.
I love making names. I love name dropping. Yeah, I'll call my mother tonight about this.
Yeah, but you should tell him what show that was so the folks can see how funny Rich's expressions were.
No, I'm not going to mention another podcast.
Oh.
No, I'm not going to do that. That's not a name anyway.
Ouch.
Yeah,
those are fighting words, eh, Rich?
Look. He said his mother. I get a lot of people going, hey, my grandparents really like you. They saw you back in the day. I stick in for two more years. It'll be, hey, my great-grandparents saw you back in the day. They're big fans. Yeah, my great-grandparents, they were in high school. They were fans of yours.
Have you ever had someone say that to you? Like, that's just got to be awkward.
No, not great-grandparents. Grandparents, but I know it's coming. I get the parents. I still get the parents. That's all right. That's right. People are getting older and older, the ones who are saying it. Hey, you got gray hair. And then you say your parents saw me back in the day? Oh, boy. Okay.
But you know what's weird? Because, like, I've been doing comedy for, you know, a while, but not as long as you. But all the comic heroes that I talk to that are like my mentors and in the business as long as you, their heroes are Johnny Carson. But I never watched Johnny Carson, so my hero was Arsenio Hall.
Well, I did Arsenio too.
He did.
Oh, did you?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. But did you think?
I did a couple Arsenio. Yeah. You had to get permission. I was doing Johnny at the time too, and they just said, look, you did it right by asking. And they would just not, you do like a 3 month, wouldn't be 3 months before you or after you did Tonight Show. That's all.
Oh, there's a waiting period.
Yeah. Well, I kind of.
Yeah. So if you did Arsenio, then you couldn't do a Tonight Show for 3 months. Wow. After, if you just did a Tonight Show, you'd have to wait 3 months before you did Arsenio. Yeah. They didn't want it too close. That's all. I don't know. Wow. I don't know why.
You know, what they do to artists, you know, there's just all these things they do to us.
Yeah, but the point I was making was, like, so I grew up watching the Arsenio Hall show, not the Johnny Carson show, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
sure, I get you, man. No, he, look, oddly, and in my recollection, the history of it, you know, he's the one really that took Johnny down, and nobody saw it coming.
Yes, sir.
I did kind of see it coming in a weird way. I didn't realize at the time, but I saw, do you remember the group The Smiths with Morrissey?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, so I was over, I had a deal at NBC, so I was over talking to the person who was handling the script for my pilot for TV sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a meeting with him over there, and the Jim McCauley was a talent coordinator, and I went by his office to say hello to him at the NBC studios, and he said, hey, you know, Cosby's on tonight. And I know you're saying Cosby is like, you know, you can't even say his name anymore. I get it. But at the time, this was a different version of Cosby you knew.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Cosby's on the show. Yeah, why don't you stick around? You can see Cosby, meet Cosby backstage. And I said, oh, fantastic. I'd love that. So I stuck around for the show, and the Smiths were booked. Now, they forced Johnny, because they were trying to get him hipper, you know, trying to, you know, his demographic. He was older. He was older, and they're like trying to force acts on him that he had no idea who the Smiths were. And he came out, and the place was packed with Smith fans. They weren't Johnny Carson fans. They got there early, got all the seats and tickets, and he came out, and his monologue died. I mean, he couldn't find footing.
Wow.
They would laugh at him at certain points. They'd laugh at punchline. You know, they were just messing with him, man. And he couldn't find his footing, and he got completely unnerved. I'd never seen Johnny. It was like, you saw the cracks on the wall.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, and afterwards it was like, I was going to meet Kyle. He says, "Get out of here, Johnny. You got to get out. Everybody, get out of here. Don't come backstage. You don't want to go backstage."
Wow,
she was furious. You know, and so you know, Yersinio was the guy who eventually, you know, forced their hand to bring in Leno early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because Yersinio was all the exposed that huge generation gap. Like mm-hmm. he got all the, he you know had huge ratings of young people.
That's right. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then he went off the air, and then he came back, you know, like 3 years ago, mm-hmm. and he didn't have that much power.
Well, yeah, well, that's the, you can't, you know, yeah.
Thanks to YouTube.
To get, like, magic back. You yeah, know, that's lightning in a bottle, and you can't get it back.
That's right.
It's, I have a question, because it says on your IMDb that you're in a movie called There Goes the Neighborhood. And
yeah, I did.
That's one of my favorite movies. No one's ever heard of it, but it has Jeff Daniels, and he's like trying to dig up money. Mm-hmm. Did you ever?
Yeah.
Did you meet Jeff Daniels?
Yeah, I did. He was. You know, it's funny. I mean, I met him so briefly because he was spending all his free time. He was like writing a script or a play mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
He told me mm-hmm. he'd come out of the trailer, do a scene, to go right back in, and he was. This is way back then. I don't know if it was a computer or one of those early word processors he was using. Showed me what he was using. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was like, you know, compared to today, it was like showing somebody a musket. But
he
was writing. He was writing. Spent all his time writing. And I had like one scene where I was playing. I played like a prison guard, I think, or something. And I had a gun.
Yeah.
And I laughed maniacally, and the director loved it. He said, "I love that laugh. That's great."
That's great.
That's all I remember. That's all I remember.
I haven't. I'll be honest. I haven't seen the movie in a long time, but I remember growing up. It was one of my favorite ones. And
mm-hmm.
So, but
yeah, I did. I did small roles in big movies, mm-hmm. and then eventually moved to smaller roles in smaller movies, mm-hmm. and then smaller roles in no movies. So,
yeah, but
my career.
But you know what? Like, because I do comedy, and like when I started doing comedy, I did it to be an actor. But then the more I fell in love.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but the more I fell in love with comedy, I kind of fell out of love with acting. Does that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I never, all I learned about acting was I was not very good at it. I never got in the moment and acting the way I did in stand-up. Yeah, just when stand-up I was up there, I was just in the moment mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. felt free and lacked, just not self-conscious. The opposite, I was free. I was not self-conscious at all. Mm-hmm. But acting, I would be thinking, when's my line? Where are you in your line? Uh-oh, my hand's moving. Why is my hand moving? Where's my hand going? You know, I didn't know. I was too self-conscious. Never enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's amazing how, like, acting makes people self-conscious, but yet on stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. there's a self-conscious, but you don't care because you're letting it out to audiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think really great actors, it's the opposite. I mean, I know I talk to actors, friends of mine, who are really good actors, and they completely get lost in it. They're in the moment. They mm-hmm. get that.
Yeah.
You know.
So, Rich, I have a question as a comedian. Do you like the term comics comic, or do you think that's kind of insulting?
No, I like the term.
Do you like the term?
Yeah, I like the term. And I think it's always, and I wrote this in my book, I think it's usually the people who have that different angle, those uh-huh. great writers, those brilliant writers that nobody's gone to where they're going. It's not the performers. We respect the great performers. You respect the great performers, but you don't love them the way, this is for me, for comics that I know,
yeah.
that we love the comics who go to places on stage, you know, in the writing aspect that other comics haven't found yet mm-hmm. or gone or dared to go.
Yeah.
And those are the comics, yeah.
There you go.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because I'm a comic, you're a comic, and you know, I look at you as a great comic, and I didn't want to insult you with that term if you found it insulting. So I have Asperger's.
No, I don't find it insulting. No, you know, the trap for people who, when they realize they are comics, the trap for comics is to play the back of the room. You know, the comics in the back mm-hmm. of the room, and it's yeah. like playing to the band.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a trap, you know. Mm-hmm. I've seen comics sort of sacrifice their career, like they just forget about entertaining the audience. They just want to entertain whatever comics are in the back of the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it can be a little bit of a trap.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, it's very interesting. I've never heard it put that way.
I wish you were in the studio today because Alan's wearing red glasses. You ever see red glasses on somebody?
I'm sure he has.
Not on a guy.
Well, I'm pushing the envelope, Rich.
I mean, it's a bold choice, yeah.
Thank you. And that my mom will hear that.
It's outgoing, right?
You mean you have frames that are big frames with red glasses?
Yeah, red. I don't, you know. Yeah.
Is that from the Charles Nelson Reilly collection?
You know what? Thank you.
There's an old reference for you, huh?
Great reference. Yeah. Yes, that's right. He had the glasses, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah. He had his big glasses, big frames, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, Rich, I have a question, and you were a writer for Roseanne, and Roseanne,
yeah.
I think Roseanne is the funniest female ever, but she's labeled as crazy or difficult to work with. Do you think working with those type of people makes you stronger as a comedy writer and a comic on stage because you've learned so much from...
I don't know. I think those producers who worked with her and probably didn't make them... some way stronger, but some people go like life's too short kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure where the line is there. You know, there's big money involved. So some people go, well, mm-hmm. life will be a lot longer if I stay here and work and make this kind of money. Yeah. So the life too short thing didn't apply to that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. She's brilliant and, you know, she knew what she wanted. I mean, I think it was proven right with that series. You know, they focused on her, and you know, when she took over the thing, they were drifting away from what she thought the show should be. And initially, I think she was proven right, but then she went off the rails a little bit at the end. I don't know what to say. I mean, she, you know, I agree with it. She's hilarious. First time I saw her, I thought, wow, man, this is hilarious comedy. She's brilliant.
She's great.
You know, those kind of lines. If the kids are alive when the husband comes home, I think I've done my job. That is,
yeah, that's a great line.
You know, that was so different. Yeah. That's what she was. She was different at the time. She was that working class feminist. Yeah. It was a hybrid that nobody had seen before.
I like that. Working class feminist. That's a good one.
There was no academic in the ivory towers.
No
theories. She was living it, man.
Yeah. Well, the reason I asked is because, like, you were a huge comedy, you know, headliner star, and then you're working with Roseanne, the funniest female, and it's kind of like when you're doing, you know, riding a motorcycle and you jump over fire from, like, the greatest, like, Evel Knievel or something.
Wow.
And then you see someone who's just as great doing it, like, you learn their tricks and stuff, you know?
It's quite a visual. I hope Rich can process that. I'm processing with my glasses.
Yeah, I'm still working on the jumping over the fire to murder as applied to comedy. I'm still working on that.
There you go. we're in the process of changing the name of the show to Imagination with Keith Reza.
Wow, that's I can't wait for that. Quite frankly.
Stretch the metaphor with Keith Reza.
There you go.
But so you see comics.
Was there a questionnaire? You just want to get that metaphor. Was there a question?
I think it was just a metaphor.
No.
Listen, some of these aren't questions, but I have a couple of things I want to get in and post some questions. Otherwise, it looks like I'm showing off.
Oh, my God.
No. The question was like, because, you know, you worked with her, so she gave you some of that, you know? So, like, funniest female.
I had my own. Roseanne, I didn't need a. I had my own. But I think we were kindred souls in the terms of we recognized each other's. I definitely enjoyed, you know, being around her. You know, she's interesting. She's funny and she's brilliant and interesting.
Strong
and I enjoyed being around her. You know, sometimes we're tough, sometimes we're. You know, in terms of work environment, when I had to adjust myself to going in and being, you know, I went there. I didn't work directly for Roseanne. I was in the writer's room, and there were a lot of producers ahead of me. I was like this guy they just brought in, and I was just beating jokes, so to speak. They said beat jokes, which means like we need another joke here, another joke there. Mm-hmm. Come up with something different, and you'd come up with ideas, and they'd say no, yes, go back here's another joke, try this one, no, yes, here's another one. And I was just in a factory line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So going from being stand-up, you know, where you control every aspect, the performance, the directing of the performance, the editing of the performance, the writing, when you control everything, and then you go to where I would just toss jokes out, and they'd bat them down until they took one. You know, it's quite an adjustment for your ego.
Yeah. Now, when they batted your jokes down, were you just like, you know what I mean?
No, I didn't get made up because some guys did, you know, they go, I know it's funny, but I didn't know. And I knew, I got it early on. learned quickly. You know, Bob Nickman was a good friend of mine, a writer. He was there already writing, and he, you know, he said, "Look, you just offer them up and move on. Don't get attached to them." Mm-hmm. There were probably a couple times that first one I thought, "Well, that was funny, man. What are you talking about?"
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But it's not my decision, and that's what I'm saying. I was an employee. I went from being like the sole owner and proprietor of Rich Scheidner Stand Up Incorporated to like an employee on the Roseanne show. The show's Roseanne. It wasn't Rich Scheidner.
Yeah.
So go offer up the jokes the way, and then when they ask you to come up with an idea for a show, come up with ideas for a show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I once heard this guy say, this old veteran writer, he said, "I come here, I'm paid to talk from 10 o'clock till they tell me to go home, and then I stop talking and go home."
Oh.
You know, so you're there to come up with ideas and sure. offer them up, and then other people make the choices until you get to the position where you're the guy or woman making the choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you go home, you know, and your wife's like, "Hi, honey, how was your day?" You just say, "Err," you know?
Yeah, yeah, wow. There was a lot of that. Look, I'm not saying it was an easy transition. I'm telling you that's what it was, but I'm not saying it went easy. I had a rough time.
Sure. Yeah.
It was, I got depressed. I got freaking depressed at first, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really.
Wow. Well, I mean, I know about depression. I have depression, and I get really depressed about my career because, like, as a comic, there's phases where you get booked a lot, and then there's phases where you don't get booked at all. Then you get big.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm on that phase where I'm not getting booked at all, and I'm like, you know.
Yeah. And you know, look, I get it. You know, I had 5 TV pilots that didn't go, and the last one didn't go, and that's how I ended up writing for Roseanne because I had a kid. And I was like, "Wow, I'm going to go back out in the road." I got heckled by Sean Penn at this club, and made me realize I'm going to be out here just, you know, doing stand up out in these nightclubs. I got a kid; I'm going to miss her growing up, and I just said I got to do something different.
Yeah.
So I went and tried to get a job, and I got a job writing for Roseanne, that's so I could get off the road.
You also wrote for which is one of my favorite series, and not a lot of people have heard of it, and I don't know why, because I thought it was hilarious, but it was called The Mind of the Married Man.
Yeah. My buddy Mike Binder was the creator and the star of it, and he brought me on, and that was a great 2-year ride. I mean, Mike is incredibly talented. You know, he's written so many things and directed movies, and we had a good idea. I think it was a great, you know, show about the voice of a married man. But again, you know, it's funny how these things, they're like, you know, we just didn't, I didn't get enough chance to really do it, but I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to say.
Well,
it was a really fun.
You know what my theory about that show, why it didn't work? Because I think that the premise and the jokes were great, and this is just from a comic, because like I grew up watching that show. But I think the actors just didn't have any all-star charisma to prove to HBO. Like Mike Binder's hilarious, funniest guy.
Yeah.
Jake Weber, who's my favorite actor, but no one knows.
Terrific.
Yeah, no one knows who Jake Weber is. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, no, you're right. We there were a couple different factors I think involved in it, but I think you're right.
Emmett Walsh. They're like, who's that?
It's just, you know, what, who knows, man? Something's just, it could be a timing thing too, it's it's just not a time for, like, you know, a lot of wives didn't want to hear what the guys were thinking. Mm-hmm.
It's,
like,
it's funny that
what you guys are thinking. You know,
but
I don't know. You know, Sex in the City was like they want to hear what women are thinking.
Yeah, and exactly. So, interesting.
I was going to say I think that Sex in the City and Desperate Housewives kind of like stole the Mind of the Married Man and reversed it.
Yeah, they went for the women.
Yeah, but and women love to hear that. But it's like guys. It's like it's funny. It's like guys are stars of action movies and women are stars of. Things about thoughts and feelings, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I think there's a lot there to that.
That's changing, but maybe that's what it was then. But I think it's changed, obviously.
Has that changed your comedy style? Because your HBO One Night Stand, it was such style on relationships. Has it changed your style? How, like, okay, everyone's either married or not in a relationship.
I still do jokes about relationships, obviously. You know, I am who I am. I can't become something different, and it's different. I mean, it is different. I mean, you talk to my daughter and her generation, they'll ask, you know, we used to ask people, like, you know, hey, you know, what sign are you or something? They'll just go, how do you identify? They'll be like, how do you identify sexually? They'll be like, that's wide open. That was a given back then, you know. you're gay, straight. We didn't even know transgender. That was even on the table.
No, yeah.
Now they're like, how do you identify? That's completely open.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so there's a whole different, a whole different generation of relationships. But I think when you get down to the core of it underneath, I don't know how much has really changed.
Yeah.
No, I don't know yet.
Yeah,
that's true. Still do these jokes and they work, and I don't know.
Yeah.
But sometimes people get, like, again, politically correct or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what that is. I think sometimes I blame it on the fact that people, you know, it started with Burger King way back in the 70s and they said, have it your way. Before that, you wanted a burger.
That's
at McDonald's,
right.
You got the burger. You don't want the pickles on it, you take the
that's
bun
right.
off, throw the pickles off.
Yeah.
You don't want the special sauce, you take a napkin, wipe it off. This is the way you got a McDonald's burger.
Yeah, and the hardest thing you had to do was ask for a napkin.
Stuff. Now it's down to, like, order coffee by, you know, half calf, big calf, foam, not foam, but you know what I mean?
Latte.
And so people expect, they think the show's all about them. They come to a comedy show, they don't identify as a crowd anymore.
No, you're catering to every individual.
So if something happens they don't like, they don't go, you know what, after the show, everybody else laughed but me.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's just me. After the show, I'll talk to the comic about it. They just scream out right then, hey, I didn't like that. Because the show's about them.
Yeah, no, it's so narcissistic and so self-centered, the society.
Yeah, and social media reinforces it.
Oh, please.
Everything
in
society reinforces it. You know, when I grew up, and maybe you guys grew up the same way, you know how you learn how to be a crowd? When you watch TV as a family.
Mm-hmm.
Six of us sat around.
Thank you.
Watched one TV.
Mm-hmm.
So, right?
Yeah.
If the show was on, you shut your mouth till commercials. Okay?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You respected everybody else who's watching the TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now everybody watches TV by themselves.
Yeah, they're off in a room.
There's they're watching on their iPad. They're watching
mm-hmm.
another TV. There's five TVs in a house. There's 14 iPads. Nobody's watching TV together. So there's no... you're never trained to be part of a crowd.
That's actually, I didn't even think about that. That's totally true, because now everyone does watch different TVs in different houses. And when I was growing up,
so they think everything, every experience is about them. So when it comes, they don't identify as being part of a crowd. Like, you know what, everybody else laughed at me, maybe it's me, I'll just wait and I'll talk to the comic afterwards, because it kind of offended me, or it kind of took me back.
Yeah.
But everybody else laughed. They don't care that everybody else laughed. They just go, that offended me. This show's about for me. This show's me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have
it shows for me.
Yeah, Rich, I have a routine, and people are familiar with it, where it addresses that. And I say, you know, I'm out there dating, and I've given up. I just date myself. I'm dating myself. See, he liked it.
Yeah,
he chuckled.
So. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm addressing that idea in the routine. You know, I date myself. I love it. I can always please myself.
Well, typical guy over there.
You were kind of taken back that I didn't laugh harder at your.
No, pick. I said no, not at all. I was telling Keith that here's a professional. He chuckled.
I know that.
Okay.
No, because
a couple of comics said, "What did you say, Alan?"
Look, this is
a nice guy.
This is why I don't watch Netflix specials. This is why I don't watch comedy specials, because I'll sit there and I'll go, I wrote that one. I did that one.
Yeah.
I heard it. Did it. Heard it. Should have wrote it. Wish I'd written it.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
You get around long enough, you've heard everything, or you've written it yourself.
Yeah.
There's sometimes when they fool you, you go,
sure.
Oh wow, that's rare. You know what I mean? That's the problem.
Yeah.
I thought that was
especially comedy these days. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it, but I see a lot of comics. You know, they only get on shows because they're popular on social media and stuff. But it's like, you know what? They got no talent. They're taking jokes from dead comedians like Drake Sather and Freddie Prinze, and it's like the audience doesn't know who these guys are. And
first of all, there's nothing new about that guy's doing that forever. And I remember this guy back when I first started. I go, that sounds kind of familiar. Then one time I was reading this Milton Berle joke book, and he was like pulling jokes right out of Milton.
Berle.
Milton Berle joke book.
Wow.
He was like just redoing them, just kind of updating them a little bit, but they were the same joke.
Yeah. See, that's kind of ballsy. I'd rather just go up with stuff I write and hope it's funny. But
I hear you.
If it bombs, it bombs. Because then I'd
what
be.
What else?
Like,
why else are we doing it, man? Really?
Yeah.
That's really.
Like, taking someone
else's
work.
That's my thing.
Yeah. Well, Rich, we have a couple Twitter questions. Do you like Twitter?
Talking about social media.
You know, I have a Twitter account. I post every.
Yeah.
6 months just to show them alive.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I follow you on Twitter, and the tweets I get once every 6 months, they're hilarious.
every 6 months. Jeez.
Yeah, no, I know. I won't get anything else done if I spend my time. I see guys, they spend all their time composing tweets, retweeting, working it. They work. I know they then go into comedy clubs and attract audiences, but I want to write other things. I don't have that much energy, man. I'm 64. Yeah. I don't have that much energy.
Wow.
To tweet 20 hours.
Wow. You're 64? I didn't know that. You look really young. Like, no.
Vampire. You should try it.
No, I'm serious. You look like...
No, he does look good.
Yeah.
Well, he's a fit guy. You know, I saw. You know, he's always been... oriented toward fitness, I think. That's the impression I got when I watched him.
Yeah, I'm nuts for fitness for the last 32 years. I'm crazy about fitness.
Rich, I just want you to know, I was just checking out your face. Alan was checking out your body.
Listen, no, please don't believe
He's the one who has red glasses.
Oh, yeah. No. See, this is you can't do anything new in this town. Jesus.
Please tell me you have prescription. You're not just wearing them to be cool. You're not just wearing red to be cool.
No, actually, they're reading glasses.
Yeah,
that's
because okay, I mean, if you got them in the closeout bin,
I did. I did. This man is brilliant. I that's exactly where I got them, in the closeout bin.
All right, Rich.
You know what? You know, I don't have money for the lens and the frame, but here I can take these frames.
That's exactly what happened.
Well, Rich, this is from Courtney is in love with Alex. Rich, after 7 years with the release of I Am a Comic, does it still motivate you career-wise?
Absolutely, man. Look, that thing got me back into doing stand-up. It was fits and starts. It was tough. But Jordan Brady, you know, smart guy that he is, good director that he is, saw something there. Like my lustful look watching these comics perform. And we're over Upright Citizens Brigade on Franklin and Hollywood.
Yeah, I love that place.
And it helped me tremendously. But I'm very grateful. But yeah, I don't want to fall back to not performing again, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was from Courtney is in love with Alex.
Thank you, Courtney, and Alex by proxy.
Yeah. It's just so weird. Like, why would you name your Twitter name that? Yeah, you know?
Those are the mysteries of life.
Because, like, what happens if Courtney breaks up with Alex?
She wants to keep guys like you from contacting her.
There you go. She covers herself well.
Well, this next question is, Alex isn't in love with Courtney.
Oh, my God. Surely you jest. Boy, this is social media.
<That's perfect.
laughs> I think Rich is going to hang up the phone and be like, you know what? I love Keith Reza.
There you go.
That's good. I like it. That was good, man.
All right. Alex isn't in love with Courtney. Wants to know, Rich, is there any chance you're going to go on a writing staff on Roseanne when she comes back? That's a good question.
No, I wasn't asked. Look, I think there are like 600 former writers and producers for that show, you know?
Yeah.
I wasn't asked. I didn't expect to be asked. It's not the same show. Look, there were like, when I was there writing, there were 24 guys on staff, men and women. I say, I always say guys generically, I get in trouble for it. But there were 24 people on staff. And that's a lot of writers. And I don't think they're going to have that kind of budget now.
Oh, yes.
I know, and I'm sure they got great writers doing it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. I really am.
24.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a lot back then.
It does. It's a lot.
Really?
I was a tremendous amount of writers.
Oh.
I don't know what they got on staff now, but I bet half a dozen is a good size sitcom staff now. I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Well,
the budgets aren't the same. You know, she was. Her budget was like over $1 million at one point. $1 million a show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And the budgets nowadays aren't. Yeah, you're right.
No. Yeah. They don't get the ratings.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't get the ratings. You know, Foxworthy, I wrote on Jeff Foxworthy's show. His show was canceled with a 7 or 8, something like that.
Wow.
You know, they'd be naming boulevards after him now with an 8.
Wow. That's.
You know, it's tough. Eight.
I once talked to a guy who was a writer back in the late 60s and 70s, right? He wrote on MASH, these kind of shows. He said one time, there were only 3 networks. He had a show that got a 31, was canceled because it was 3rd out of 3 shows.
Wow.
31.
Yeah, that's harsh.
They'd renamed Los Angeles to his name.
Oh, man. This advice is really making me not want to be a comedy writer anymore.
Well, don't give up.
No. I mean, there's more shows out there now than ever.
Shows.
They just don't pay as much money because they don't get the ratings used to get. It's everything's split up in such small sections.
No, I was totally kidding because I write for a podcast, I write for a podcast, and you know, I submit my jokes and my material, and it doesn't get picked up. But it's like one out of every 100. Well,
it's,
you know,
it's Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, way to name drop.
I always name drop. This is show business.
But jeez. All right.
The worst thing is when you drop a name and they go, "Who?"
Yeah, that's, I know that's bad.
My names aren't as heavy as I thought.
It's like, oh, I gotta get really better at this name dropping thing.
I better get better names.
Yeah. All right, a last Twitter question. This is from Roxman101. Rich, is there any comic that started doing comedy in the 90s that has improved now? I think what they're saying
comic that started in the 90s and has improved?
Yeah, I think what they're saying is because you retired and then you came back and you saw them better, like improve.
I can't remember anybody that went,
that's a tough
question. People have improved. I'll tell you, in my time, I'll tell you the guy who in my time, and this is my time, when I first saw Dennis Wolfberg, and you probably don't know who he is, but you can Google him and see him.
Yeah.
When I first saw him, I wasn't that impressed. I saw him in a comic strip, 79, mm-hmm. 80, you know, in that time when he was first starting. I was like, he didn't really impress me. He used to end his act with this singing Bye Bye American Pie, mm-hmm. you know, and the audience sing along. And mm-hmm. I really wasn't impressed with Dennis that much as a stand-up comic. Really nice guy on stage, but not as a stand-up. And then back in the mid-80s, I kind of lost touch with him. You know, I was out on the road doing my thing, and somebody one time, there was a club called Igby's over in West L.A., oh, like yes. 87, 88, Igby's. Somewhere near. Somebody said, man, we're going over to watch Dennis Wolfberg tonight. What? Oh, man, he is tearing it up. And I went over there, man, and he found his voice, and he found his style, and he was killing. And he got taken down early by cancer, but he was a guy that was going to break big. I mean, he just was so likable, but he found his, I mean, just saw somebody improve. He just mm-hmm. found it, man.
Well,
you know? Yeah.
Now, thank you, Rich, because that was a tough question. And
that
somebody evolves suddenly, and you know, you're looking at them one way, and then that's what's funny about stand-up. It's an organic.
Look, I'll tell you what. Here's a name you do know, probably, okay. And maybe you're the person to ask the question. Bill Hicks.
Hicks.
He was a middle act.
Yeah.
Bill was a middle act, and he did Letterman show. He was doing straight stand-up in clubs. You know, he knew how to do that. His drunk driving bit and stuff mm-hmm. like that. He did mm-hmm. stuff that were crowd-pleasing bits for comedy clubs back mm-hmm. in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, Bill was like, I can't do this anymore mm-hmm. and sleep at night. We couldn't sleep anyway. Let's put it this way. I couldn't do this anymore and shave. Sure, okay, sure. Whatever it was, Bill snapped. He started working mm-hmm. more truthfully to who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember then seeing one time and went, whoa, because he was middling for me. And he started doing this whole bit that we were doing. He was doing off stage about Elvis Presley and mm-hmm. all these stuff about preachers and all. And then he did it on stage and walked half the crowd. But mm-hmm. I was laughing, despite the fact that I was going to follow him and deal with half a crowd because he ran half of them out.
Yeah.
I went, oh my God, this is something different. Where did this come from? You know, he's doing this.
Yeah. Well, Rich, unfortunately, yeah. the time is ticked.
Okay.
And I know you got a show in 10 minutes.
Well, that was so generous of you. He's got a gig.
Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Keith, I had a lot of fun, Alan. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rich.
Rich, is there a place the folks at home can find you?
You want to name your site?
Yeah, they can find me at richscheidner.com. You can find me on Facebook, you know, Rich Scheidner, ITCHSHYDNER. Yeah. Buy the book, Kicking Through the Ashes, you know.
Beautiful.
All right, Rich. Kill it tonight, pal.
Kill it, dude.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
All right.
Take care. Bye. Great guy.
That was the great Rich Scheidner, guys.
No, I was so impressed how he answered some of your really amazing Twitter, which that was a hard question.
That was a hard question.
You know, I was almost about to chime in and say, do you need any help on that one?
Yeah,
that got me so nervous I can't even say.
That was actually a very hard question. I don't know why I chose it.
Well, I mean, he just
I think I chose it because like I thought like maybe it'd be interesting.
It was.
Yeah, but I guess I didn't figure how many I was thinking like for example, maybe Todd Glass started in the 90s. Now he's, you know, Todd Glass.
Well, yeah.
After I read the question, I was like, that's a fucking hard question.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he mentioned Hicks, Bill Hicks.
Yeah, so Bill Hicks is dead.
But he tagged it with the fact that Bill Hicks came up with authentic material that was closer to his own persona, who he was. And you know, you and I have talked about that. that your new material must be you. It must be the truth. It must be who you actually are, not just the same jokes you've heard, you know, the same type of material. Yeah. You can do the same type of material, but, you know.
Did you know? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go on. No.
But did you know on June 10th, 1976, Rich Schneider did The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson?
I did.
With John Travolta? And Meredith Streith?
I don't recall him.
And Streith. Tom Cruise?
Wow, that's a lot of names.
I'm just kidding. Remember we were
Yeah.
So I don't even know if that was the right date.
Dude, that's like, that's just honest. Just like, you know,
I just thought that was just so funny. I mean, not to like, you know.
But that is like, that is funny in a way.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought I was
sure
living the life.
Yeah, well.
It's like, Alan, did you know on December 12th, 1996, you were at Starbucks?
I might have been.
Yeah, it's like.
That's where you're screwing with people. So that's like a mine. We don't want to. It's a mine F.
It's a mine.
Yeah, you know what a mine. My mom, you're on the air, Alan.
I think everyone heard that.
No, well, for those of you,
ladies and gentlemen, in four years, I got Alan Lee to curse.
Yeah, I apologize. And mother,
must be those red glasses.
I'll just tell my mom not to listen to the last 20 minutes of this.
No, Alan, we love you. The Rifters love you.
Oh, I love you too.
Everyone on Rifters say, Alan Lee.
And you know that I'm the kind of guy that no matter where I am, a checkout line at CVS, Walgreens, Ralph's, you can approach me, and I'll give you an autograph.
Yeah, and you'll name drop and be like, yeah, man, I just interviewed Rich Schneider.
I'll chat with you.
See? Very complimentary on my red glasses. He doesn't tweet, so he doesn't follow me, but woo.
Thank you. High five.
That was a great show.
I loved it.
All right, guys. Well, for the folks at home, you can follow Rich Schneider on social media, Facebook. His last name is spelled S-H-Y-D-N-E-R. Alan Lee, do you have anything coming up?
Well, you know, I am going to go see, we're going to go see our friend Jay Moore.
Way to name drop.
He was a guest on our show, as you remember.
Mr. Name Drop Magoo.
We will. And, you know, we've got a busy night.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we have other people coming on.
Yeah.
And we'll let you find that out.
And next week will be our last one of the season.
That's right. We're closing out the season.
And then I'm going back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to try and get more comedy gigs and stuff.
Sure.
You know?
And you're writing. But you're always writing.
But we do got to go. If you guys want to help the show, this is very important. If you guys want to help the show, subscribe on the iTunes at Reza Riffs. Mm-hmm. Hit, you know, subscribe, rate, and review us and with honest feedback.
That's one. Who would you please?
Yeah, because we need it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like us on Twitter and Instagram at Reza Riffs and our Facebook at Reza Riffs.
And we love you.
We love you. Good night. Thanks again, once again, to Rich Schneider. And I'm Keith Reza. Have a good night.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.